Hello, I'm Cynthia Hanemichael. Elevate Your Life is here to strengthen families and empower individuals. Thank you for spending time with us. Listen to stories from people who share advice on strengthening relationships. During the day, I meet with fun and inspiring people to help them manage their money. To schedule a complimentary appointment with me, go to calendly.com/CynthiaH/evaluation. Connect with us on Facebook at Elevate Your Life Podcast for extra content. This is your host, Cynthia Hanemichael. It's time to elevate your life. Zachary, would you like to start by telling me a little bit about yourself?
So, basically, I'm married. I have three kids, 10, 5, and 4-year-olds. So we've been married about 10 years. And so we've kind of gone through a lot of the communication issues that you have in a marriage. And then I worked for a company for about 6 years. And then as we were growing it, we were having some kind of difficulties growing, getting it, past that, beginning stage. And when I left that company last year, I started my business, and kind of out of that and between that and my marriage and just the whole process of learning through it, I started writing a book that I never thought I would do. So, really? Kind of gives you, that gives you a little bit of a backstory behind it. But.
Okay. So why did you decide to write a book?
One day I was talking with my wife, and, I just felt real misunderstood, whether, from the job that I lost, I got fired from, and I felt it was just a big misunderstanding and that nobody wanted to actually, speak what they were thinking or what they were seeing or that nobody wanted to open up a little bit and actually have a conversation. Instead, kind of pushed it aside and made it a bigger, drama deal than it had to be. And so that kind of made me start thinking about me. And, after getting fired from a job you really had passion for, it was really a little difficult to kind of bounce back from a mental standpoint and a self-value point. So, after thinking through that for the last several months, I was just kind of thinking, really felt misunderstood and was trying to figure out how to, push further. And then I started seeing it in my marriage where, my wife, she always takes things like what I say comes across differently than what I mean. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, I just kind of started running with it. And then I sat down, I told my wife, we had a pretty long conversation one morning, and it was actually a good conversation. We actually were sharing what we thought, and we actually got somewhere with it. It wasn't just on the surface of, hey, how was your day? How are the kids? And it wasn't that type of conversation. We actually went deep into, what we thought of ourselves, and it gave us more of an understanding of who we are and who our relationship is. And so by doing that, I told my wife that day, I was like, I could write a book on this. But I've never even thought about really writing a book. I mean, maybe a little bit, but I've always hated writing and that type of thing. So it wasn't a big, goal of mine. But once I said that, I really started looking at that opportunity. And I sat down one day and I wrote out all the, different type of topics or what I thought would kind of play into it. And it just kind of came together. I kind of built an outline of 10 chapters, and then I just kind of started writing it from there. So,
wow. So I'm curious, when you started this conversation with your wife, how did you start that conversation? Do you even remember?
I do. I mean, I think one of the conversations in particular, the one that I was talking about, started from, we travel a lot. We've got family that are, a couple hours away. So a lot of times we're in the car or and that's where we end up talking. And so, my wife would, at this particular time, she said something, something to the effect of, we all, like, she asked why we always talk in the car. And I didn't really have a reason for it, other than it was just the opportunity that we had, you know. So it was just, you know, you get in the car and you got the kids in the back and they're, you know, fiddling with stuff or whatever while we're traveling. And so the conversation just starts there. But, and I'm always I'm always trying to figure out how to do better and be better. So I'm always thinking about that type of thing. So I'm always, like, my conversations, I don't really talk about the weather, the, you know, on the server. I don't like to talk about that type of stuff for very long. So we, you know, we got down, we were traveling, and she said that. And so we kind of just started, like, and then she said something to the effect that she felt trapped in the truck. And that's why she asked the question was, you know, why do we always have conversations in the car? And because I'm definitely the dominant speaker of the two of us. And so when we do have a conversation, I usually lead it and dominate that conversation. So it just started, it kind of started from there. I mean, it started that she was asking why we always have to have these deeper conversations in the truck. And it was just, it was more of an opportunity for me than it, not necessarily that I, you know, targeted that way to make her feel trapped, but, and that was the thing, is like, I didn't mean for her to feel trapped. And so it really started making us think about what other times of our conversations do we feel a certain way because, you know, the other person is doing something. Mm-hmm. There's another example of, you know, we had she said something and it kind of aggravated me, and then, but she's cooking. And so for me, I like to focus on the conversation, but she's trying to cook and talk at the same time. And so it was very hard for me to talk with her because she's, you know, doing something at the same time. But that's how, like, that's just not, I can't do two things at once. So that's where, how I am. And so it's just about that learning process of how we communicate. Like, do you know how your spouse likes to receive or likes to communicate with you? And so that's what those are the conversations I started thinking about, and we're like, you know, what, and trying to dive into. And then from there, I went back into my job and the coworkers and the team that I had and the team that I was building, and some of those breakdowns at the same level. But so that kind of rambled a little bit, but that gives you an idea of how that conversation started. But because I've always been real big on, hey, just I want to know your opinion, because there's value in it. And so I had, like, I always felt like I had to push and prod that to get that opinion, to get her opinion, and she felt like she didn't want to give it because I am the dominant speaker. And so she didn't feel like she thought I was going to reject it. And there's some validity to that. You know, I'm prideful and stuff on my opinion. So that's where we all get, is you want to push your opinion because it's yours. Uh-huh. And so it just makes it a little bit tougher to have those deeper conversations.
Interesting. Okay. Did you find that there is an ideal place for you to speak with your wife, or an ideal time?
I think it's for my wife especially, it's the blinds, like, not blindsiding her with it is the best thing. So whether it's in the truck or in the car or, you know, wherever it may be, not blindsiding her with that, you know, real deep, heavy conversation. So say if we are about to travel and stuff, then, and we have something to talk about, then I may mention it before we get in the truck, before we get, you know, on the road, and ask if it's something she would like to talk about on the way down there. And if not, then we don't talk about it then, because she's not going to be engaged and she's not going to be willing to share her full opinion if she didn't want to do it in the first place. So now, I mean, there's something to say that if they never want to have that conversation, then ultimately you've got to get real and, you know, sit down and do something. But then again, at that point, you don't want to have it in the truck. You want to have it at your house or somewhere where y'all can sit and have some quiet time. But it's for all of those, you know, parents out there, if you've got kids, like, you understand that sometimes it's hard to find that quiet time to do that. So I think that was the biggest thing for me, is she just doesn't like to be, or feel, she doesn't like to feel blindsided in those conversations. So if I have a reason to, if we have a kind of a deep conversation that needs to be had, then, you know, I'll just mention it and say, hey, I would like to have some time to have this conversation. And then she kind of, in her mind, she starts to think about when, and she kind of prepares herself for it.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that there is usually going to be one dominant person in the relationship, one person who is more of the talker than the other?
I think for the most part, yes. There's definitely that. That's definitely going to be the case. And but that doesn't mean that, you know, that dominant speaker is any, you know, has better ideas or anything. It's just that, and I think from both standpoints, they both, like, the dominant speaker needs to learn how to listen more. And that's where I'm at, is to speak my opinion and then let them, you know, sit on it and let them think about it and then give their response. It takes, you know, my wife likes to take her time in responding on in that conversation. So I need to, so my fear is that silence. I always hated that silence. So I feel like I got to fill the silence with something. And so in doing so, it doesn't allow her the processing time to really think about her response. And so I think, and to answer your question, yes, there's definitely going to be one that's more dominant. And it may be that I've got some friends that are very close. They're both talkative. They're both outgoing, but they're very, like, in certain conversations or certain topics, they're very, one's very dominant, one's very kind of laid back. So I do financial coaching for my business, and I specialize in marriage communication. So I'm really trying to tie this book into my financial coaching aspect to help marriages really connect on that different level where, around their finances. That usually where, you know, we fail to communicate at a deeper level is in that finance world, because we think it's an either or type of mentality when it doesn't have to be. But long story short, they, you know, they're very, my friends are very close. Like, one's, they're very talkative, but one's very dominant talking about money than the other. And so when, if you have these different topics, if you do have those very close, you know, people that are very talkative, like, just about anything, but then they'll have their niches, they'll have their certain conversations that they do dominate. And it's usually, you usually have to see and find those different things out. So it just being about, or being more intentional about being self-aware in your conversations and what you're talking about.
Okay. So when we were talking before, you were talking about in your book, there are multiple types of communication.
Yes. So basically what I've laid out here in my book is that we have four main paths or main avenues of communication, and that's your self-communication, your spousal communication, your team and your coworker communication, and then your stranger communication. So obviously there's more kind of little nuances out there, like friends and family, and, you know, there's those types of things too, but I think you can really tie it into any of these areas. But so within those four, those paths, there's those 10 characteristics. So you have things such as, you know, expectations, empathy, trust. You know, I have, what I have on here is what I call iron sharpens iron. So that's the theory of, you know, your idea versus my idea. It doesn't have to be either or. It can be, you know, you create a new idea based off the two that you'll have. And so you have our idea instead of, and don't fight on, it has to go one way. It's not black and white. It can be, you know, you can merge the two ideas from there. And then there's a few others. I'm losing my train of thought here, but perspective, awareness are two others. And then what I call motivational interviewing. It's so, you know, we talk about, I either say motivational interviewing or manipulation. So we think of manipulation as a negative connotation, like it's a bad thing, but if you really look at the details, the, you know, the definitions, it's very similar to convincing or really anything of sales and anything like that. You're trying to convince somebody of your own opinion. And so, but I mean, yes, you can manipulate people, and that's not a good thing, because you're like almost forcing them to do it. But then, you know, how do you not manipulate and not convince somebody if you really have passion for what your idea is? And so just trying to communicate that to your spouse and to, I mean, your team, it's a big part of leadership, is you're trying to convince your team to do something, to get on a plan that you're passionate about, but maybe they're not as passionate about. So you're trying to convince them that this is the way to go. And so there's that, but there is that level of, you don't want to force them into doing something they don't want to do. But you also want to be able to convince them that it is the best way. So I kind of talk about that and how the differences of that aspect of manipulation or motivational interviewing. We call it motivational interviewing because you're trying to motivate them on their own, so that it's not, it doesn't get that negative connotation of I'm trying to manipulate you into doing what I want you to do, that only benefits me. So there's that difference there. But it's really, it's not a black and white line. It's not a fine line that you know when you cross into manipulation, mm-hmm. type of thing. So there's those 10 characteristics around these communications that, like each one of these will play into yourself. You know, do you manipulate yourself, or do you try and convince yourself? And do you try and convince your spouse or your team, or even if you met someone on the street, would you try and convince them to do something you want to do right off the bat when you meet with them? And so there's like all of these characteristics play into these four main avenues of our communication styles, or that's not styles, but who we communicate with. So, you know, your trust, do you trust your spouse? Do you trust yourself? I mean, and so I start the book with the self-communication, because it's the biggest key. It's the biggest area that we have to have control over. And if you can't communicate with yourself and trust yourself, then you lose all self-confidence, self-value going forward, going out into the world to do anything, whether it is meeting a person to marry, or, you know, getting a job to work at and building a team. So if you don't have that communication and around your own, in your own mind, then you're going to struggle with any other communication down the road.
We'll be right back after a message from our sponsors. Welcome back.
Tell me more about communicating with yourself, because I feel like that's something most people don't think about very much.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, we talk about, you know, expectations is one of the big characteristics. And, you know, we set our own expectations within what we want to do. So say I want to, you know, in the losing weight in the fitness world, people were like, I want to lose X amount of weight and do this, and I want to be this person, but then there's no structure around getting to that point.
Uh-huh.
And so we don't communicate, you know, we have this expectation that's set, we don't communicate to ourselves how to get there. We talk about it in the spouse sense, like where do your conversations fail? Typically it's an expectation that was set wrong. Like maybe I thought we were going to this, to do this at this time, and you know, you thought we were going to do this at a different time. And so we had that missed expectation. And so, but I think we do that within ourselves even more so, probably more often, because we think, oh, I already know, I don't have to kind of lay that out for myself. And then accountability, the self-accountability within that communication. So when you do say, you know, how many times do we fail at doing something that we know we want to do, mm-hmm. whether it's a habit we want to create or any kind of new idea that we want to do, we struggle to hold ourselves accountable to that.
Hmm. How do we help ourselves to hold ourselves accountable and to be able to reach those goals better then?
So I think the main reason for that, or the main way to do that, is to be self-aware. And number one, where are you today? How do you feel about yourself? What is your perspective of yourself? Do you trust yourself in what you say? I struggle with that a lot because, I felt that other people felt they couldn't trust me in some aspects. And so it made me start thinking, do I even trust myself? Can I trust myself to do what I say I'm going to do? Because ultimately, nobody's perfect. Nobody can do everything they say they're going to do. Because it's just, that's just how life is, where nobody can, if I tell someone I'm going to do it, I'll do my best to get everything done I say, but sometimes I can overextend myself and go too far. And so there's that balance there at some level. But so where does that self-value come from? And where do the self-aware, you have to know where you are today to know where you, what you need to work on. So for me, what I like to do is what I call a self-accountability worksheet. And it's nothing fancy. It's just a Word document that I do weekly. And I start looking at my goals for that week. Like, what do I really want to get done this week? And so I have that for my weekly, focus. Like if I feel like I'm getting derailed off of those goals, I'll go back to it. I'll look at it and, okay, this is what I need to focus on. This is what my plan was. This is what I told myself I was going to do this week. And so I'm going to stick to it. Because a lot of times, what we say today is different in 2 days, especially in business. If you're an entrepreneur, you know, as you do something, like as you say, you write it down, I'm going to do this, or I need to do this. Then 2 days later, something else comes up. Something else is more feels more pressing that you need to do. And so you do it instead of what you already told yourself you're going to do. And right. I think that's where it breaks down our self-value or our self-trust, is because that aspect of, we told ourselves we're going to do X, but instead we did Y because it came up in a moment and we impulsed it and we did it. Now, did you accomplish something? Yes. But did you accomplish what you already told yourself you're going to accomplish? There is power. There is value in saying no to the new thing, at least for now. Like, put it on your next week goals, not this week. Finish what you told yourself you're going to start so that you can move forward and do better and understand, start to build that self-trust within yourself so that you can build trust with other people, if that makes sense.
Okay. So basically you're showing yourself that you can be accountable to yourself.
Absolutely. I like to look at it from a budget standpoint. Like, if you're single and you tell yourself, I'm going to spend $100 on groceries this week. Well, you go to the grocery store and, you end up spending $130. And so in your mind, you're like, well, it's not a big deal in your mind. You kind of blow it off because it's your own budget. You can do what you want, but you're not holding yourself accountable to what you said you're going to do. And so whenever you do, if you look in your marriage and you tell your spouse, hey, we're going to spend $100 on groceries, then you go to the store and you spend $130, she's not going to be happy because y'all's expectations were $100 and now it's $130. And so you kind of have that disagreement, or at least maybe there's nothing said about it, but there's a underlying animosity that's building because of those. But you thought, it started with yourself because you thought it was okay doing it with yourself because it was just you can control your own budget and it's not a big deal. And then you move into the marriage and you still do those same habits because maybe you control the budget and you think it's okay, but she's looking at it in a totally different world, a totally different viewpoint. And it's almost degrading to her. Like, you don't value her enough to hold to what you said you're going to do. And so all of this really begins with your own communication in your own mind.
Okay. So by following these principles, has it strengthened your relationship as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think, just the last year, it's been, I mean, just it's been a rough year for us and for, I mean, the nation, really. And so I think people have had time to communicate, but whether they did and they actually are working on some of the things that their relationship is struggling on, like for us, it's been, you know, communicating, losing the job and starting my business and, you know, having to do some different things. I mean, we started building a house in October last year. The Friday before I lost my job, we started building a house. So we're communicating on that. We're, you know, losing the job. We're, you know, going through all these emotions. And if you don't communicate that to each other and what, you know, where those expectations are, then you're just going to, like, you're putting stuff on the back burner and it's just going to boil and boil and boil until it boils over and you can't control it. And so for us, it's been really beneficial. I think we've grown more in the last 9 months from thinking through these conversations than we have in the last 9 years as a married couple. So, you know, we were married for 4 years before, you know, we really started building our trust with each other. Because I was young and I was too prideful and arrogant to, you know, own up to mistakes and things that were said. But I think it was that fear of being wrong. But I think now it's more of, it's not that I'm wrong. It's just that I have a different viewpoint. And so it's not like she's right and I'm wrong, or I'm right and she's wrong. We have different viewpoints. Let's come together and, you know, figure out whatever we're facing and figure out a new plan to move forward. So it's given us the ability to go deeper and understand each other a lot better. So I've got a blog on my website that talks about having those honest conversations. And the example that I have is, several years ago, I would come home from work and, you know, we talk about the kids, we talk about work, we talk about what we're doing this weekend, but we wouldn't. And at the end of the night, she would tell me, you know, we never talk, we never communicate, we never really talk to each other. And I'm like, we've been talking for the last several hours. But that's where the failure was. Her expectation of talking or communication was totally different than what my understanding of it was. And so really starting to realize, just because words are coming out of our mouth does not mean that she feels that we're communicating or we're relating to each other on a deeper level. So I think to pick that situation and put it into today, we've been able to take that conversation into a deeper level and say, how are you feeling? Like, what is it like? What is your viewpoint? What does that make you feel? And then, you know, we start to figure out who we are and who my, like, I've started to figure out more of who my spouse is and how she thinks, how she operates, kind of, you know, her natural tendencies of communication. And so I know moving forward, if she says something, or she, you know, reacts to something that I said, that it's probably not, she's not out to get me. If she trusts me and she loves me, then she's not out to get me. She's not trying to hurt me. It's just, you know, it got emotional, and like everybody can get emotional at times. And so you just got to trust. If there's no trust in that relationship, then you can't build that communication. I mean, you have to have some of that trust there to build off of. Mm-hmm. And that's where we've been able to really make some good progress. I think this book has probably done more for me than has anybody else so far. But obviously, it's not out yet. But I always tell myself as I'm writing it, like, this book is doing more for me and my marriage than I can even think it may do for anybody else. So,
So who is the ideal person that should be reading your book?
Oh man, I haven't really thought about that. I think it's really anybody that feels that their relationships with either their spouse or their team, or, you know, if they feel like it's just on the surface, if you feel like it's just a matter of, you know, daily task, like if your boss is only telling you what to do and there's no, It's not a two-way street. It's only a one-way communication. And that can be in the spouse as well. Like if you're just, you know, strictly if the dominant speaker is the only one that kind of pushes things and the other one doesn't ever get a chance to talk, if you feel that way, then I think you need to read it because it helps you see the communication web and how everything kind of ties in together. I've got a diagram that makes it look like a spider web and how all of these characteristics tie into each other. Because if you trust your spouse, then and your perspective of them, and then your expectations can be set right. And so there's all these different characteristics that kind of play hand in hand. But really, the ideal person is that person that just feels like they're stuck on the surface with their relationships with, or with their own communication within their self. If you don't dig down deep into who you are yourself, then you're going to struggle with communicating with anybody else because you can't dig down with them either. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's that person that's really just stuck on the surface with their communication and how far they want to take any conversation at all.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that everybody feels like they're having surface conversations at one point or another in their life with somebody.
And absolutely.
Sometimes multiple people, depending on where they're at.
Absolutely. And I think that's where, I'm going to stop doing that and I'm going to start this other way. It's a progress. It's something you start and you work your way up to that building block. You're starting a different way of managing your communication. So managing your own value or your own self-value. So it's not a flip of a switch. You can't just flip it on and say, okay, now I'm a different communicator. I'm a better communicator. Because you have to get past some of those old tendencies. And, you know, when we argue or when we get aggravated at each other, nowadays we try and sit back and say, okay, why are we aggravated? You know, what's really pushing our buttons here? Is it pride? Is it, you know, I just don't want to do it. I don't like somebody telling me what to do. You know, you start to really figure out why you're feeling that way. Mm-hmm. And if you can't stop and ask yourself that, and most people don't, they argue with their spouse and they go, well, that's just what spouses do. It's not a big deal. You know, we'll get over it or she'll get over it and move on. Well, you know, 50% of marriages end in divorce, and I would venture to say a lot of that is just because they don't set the expectations and the communication. They don't talk about how they feel about certain conversations.
Yeah, I think that's you. I think you're right. I like how you're tying accountability and trust into your own personal communication and how you're including that in the way that you communicate. I think that's a really unique perspective.
Yeah, I think it's been a journey for myself that I've kind of, you know, went along with this and why it's been so important. Because for the longest time, I neglected myself. I didn't do much of self-evaluation. It was more outward, like what can I do? What jobs can I get that propel me forward faster? And so I was I had an agenda for myself and for my goals and stuff, but I never would like sit down and say, how are you feeling about this? Like, where does this come from? And that type of like, how do you build self-accountability so that you don't have to have somebody holding you accountable or holding your hand to do the things you want to do, especially building a business or running a business or, you know, being a part and not being micromanaged, like not having your boss right there on you watching everything. You have to have some sort of self-accountability to say, I'm going to get up and work 8 hours today. Or, you know, even though nobody's there to say, you know, hey, you're supposed to be here at 8 this morning or, you know, whatever that time may be. When you're setting your own schedule, it makes it a little bit harder to hold yourself accountable to those things you want to, because you're easily distracted. And I think that's where that journey began, was for me to really evaluate where I stood on myself so that I could have a conversation with my wife and know and trust myself that saying, well, I didn't mean it that way. So I want her to understand that I wasn't trying to attack her. I wasn't trying to target her in that conversation. It just came out in a way that she heard it, that wasn't, you know, my intention. And I think that's where it's been able to help me know, you know, my mindset. And when I do say something, then I kind of can already say, okay, that's not what I meant. And I can kind of defend it a little bit before she even kind of it has time to take it all the way in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Okay, interesting. All right, well, we are getting towards the end of our program. What is the biggest piece of advice that you would want to leave somebody with?
I think the biggest thing is just to start taking inventory of yourself. And take inventory of your intentions behind certain conversations or certain comments. Or, you know, I think from a couple standpoint, I've seen people, like, they'll joke and they'll bicker at each other. They'll, you know, make sexist jokes and that type of thing. And, you know, it's all fun and games at some point, but, you know, how does that really make your spouse feel? And do you need to stop doing it for, you know, for her sake, not for, cause I think a lot of people will just kind of blow by and be more like, oh, it doesn't matter. She'll, you know, it's just a joke. But you don't really realize how they feel about it unless you start asking. But then what is your intention behind that, you know, comment? Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in a household of smart alecks. And so there was a smart aleck comment every other corner. And so you had to learn how to build that wall of, I can't get hurt on every comment, but other people may not have grew up with it. And I think, so that's where, even with our finances, I talk about, you know, in the first couple of sessions, we talk about how did you grow up with your finances? What was your family like around money? And so it's the same thing. It's just being that, taking that inventory in yourself and say, how was my childhood? How was my, you know, young adult life? Or where, so depending on where you are, like, how did I communicate in high school and college and in my beginning, you know, dating relationships? And so just taking inventory of yourself and knowing where you are allows you to know where you want to get if you set that plan in place.
All right, thank you. And if somebody wants to read your book, I know it's not out yet, but do you have a approximate date that it's going to be completed, or where can they purchase that from you?
I'm looking at towards the end of the year, hopefully having something, maybe, you know, beginning of the year, having it done and complete. But ultimately, I'm building my website right now. I'm trying to put in kind of a page that has that some of the ideas behind the book and different things. And we're probably going to start some sort of following or some sort of, you know, email list that I can have for people to stay in touch with us on it and keep up with the progress, so to speak. And by doing that, you'll get certain, you know, behind the scenes, you know, content that's not out yet, or I'll probably, you know, throw some snippets of the chapters out there and kind of get, keep people's interest in that regard. So if you want to, you can go to my website, and then, which is aafinancialcoaching.com. If you'll subscribe to our email list, and then we'll be sending out updates whenever we get that separate email, or that separate following for the book is specifically, once we get that set up, then you can subscribe to it as well, and you'll get all those free content that'll be coming out on the book. And it'll have, you know, what we'll do, some, we're talking about doing a lot of different things. So if you'll just stay up with us, we'll have some pretty really cool, unique content coming out with it around the book, coming up real soon. So I don't want to give too much away, but I want people to get interested in it and come join us and see what we're doing.
Yeah, that sounds great. Is your Word document going to be one of those things that you sent out?
Is my what? I'm sorry?
Your Word document with your accountability?
Yes. Yeah, so I have that kind of built and ready to give out to people. It's just something simple, a few questions that you can ask yourself and how you're doing with your goals and that type of thing. But it's one of those things that's going to be kind of put up there and ready for people to take advantage of, and kind of maybe it'll help them in their weekly and kind of just starting to build that self-accountability.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, great, Zachary. It's been wonderful to have you here, and best of luck on finishing your book. I'm excited to see it come out.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure to talk about it.
Yeah, thank you, Zachary. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Elevate Your Life. We'll see you next time.